The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me, we have Todd Youngblood and Dan Lack, but also my co-host, Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
Not much, Stone. Another tough day at the office.
Yeah, man, that was a tough drive, though, wasn't it? A little bit wet?
Yeah, it was a lot of water out there. I saw a bunch of animals pairing up two by two.
So what happened with you last week, and what do you got coming up in the next few days?
Gosh, the big news from last week was our tweet up at Fuego Mundo. We had over 100 people show up at our tweet up. It was a great crowd, a wonderful event. Despite the fact that there was a monsoon, we had a wonderful event.
That's when all this rain really started, wasn't it? Last week, about the time you had your tweet up?
Well, typically when I have an event is when the rain starts. Right. You know? So we don't need the governor to pray. We need Todd to host an event.
And this week we've got press passes to the goings-ons on Friday. Tell us a little bit about that. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I know. You're the one that's bigger in that event. It's the New Media Atlanta social media conference, but it should be pretty exciting. I don't know how we finagled press passes, but we did. So we'll be there in full force and out front with our flip cam.
Yeah, we're going to take the camera, and if we don't talk to some of the rock stars there, we're going to talk to some of the people that are attending and see what they get out of it.
If we don't talk to the rock stars, we'll talk to you.
All right, makes sense.
Outstanding.
It'll be fun. We've got a great show this morning. Coming up, we're going to have a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Todd Youngblood, and then after that, we're going to visit with Dan Lack. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning is Todd Youngblood. He is the Grand Poobah CEO, chief guy at the YPS Group. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thank you. It's delightful to be here.
So what kind of work do you guys do out there? What are you doing for folks?
Well, we focus on sales management, mostly in the industrial sector, industrial distributors, and we do something that we call sales process engineering.
Oh, sounds hairy.
It sounds more difficult than it really is, but you have to have your marketing that makes you sound like a smarter guy than maybe you really are. But it's an analytical sales management methodology.
Wait a minute. Sales process engineering, analytical, all in the same sentence. Be careful.
All kinds of oxymorons in the same in the same sentence there. But it truly is. It takes Six Sigma and lean management concepts that have been around really since after World War II that have been just extraordinarily successful with manufacturing processes. And it's taken those same kind of methodology, same kind of thoughts, same kind of process, same kind of management approach and applying it to sales. The idea is sales is a process, just like any other business process, and we're going to manage it exactly the same way.
So what kind of organizations are you working with?
Mostly, as I said, industrial distributors. They tend to be smaller companies, anywhere from 5 or 10 million at the low end up to maybe 150 million or so. We've focused on not working with companies larger than that, frankly, because it's more interesting, more fun, and we can have a bigger impact when we're sitting down eyeball to eyeball with the owner of the company. The guy that owns the store can make the decisions and not dance around and worry about, oh, is this going to hurt my career and all those kind of corporate infighting sorts of things. So we've been able to avoid all of that.
So these business owners and the top performing salespeople in those organizations, I get the sense, or my instincts are, they don't say where you've been all my life when you come in saying things like analytical and sales process engineering.
No. The sales call that we make is with one of two people. It's either the owner of the business or a vice president of sales who probably, almost in most cases, also has a significant equity interest in it. Yeah, when you say accountability and discipline, you're right. The sales force says, wahoo me, and they run the other way until they figure it out, until they get into it. And that's part of the beauty of the whole methodology is it makes sense in the end.
Can you walk us through some of the high points of the methodology, what an engagement for you might look like?
Probably the best way to get a basic feel for it, we work on three core principles that underlie everything else we do, underlie the whole methodology. And if you look at the first one, it's going to sound like motherhood and apple pie, Stone.
Good.
Because it is. But there's some teeth in it, though. But the first principle is continuous improvement of your sales process is fundamentally essential. Period, end of discussion. I've been doing this for a little over 10 years now. I have yet to have one person at any level of management or sales disagree with that. So, you know, I'll look at you and Todd and say, does that make sense to you guys? Do you agree?
Well, you're right. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
You can't argue with it. The real point is, the teeth in it is, you've already accepted and embraced core principles 2 and 3, unbeknownst to you.
Okay. But the fact that that's one of your core principles, to me, tells me that most organizations aren't, in fact, doing that. Is that real?
That's exactly right. And let me talk about core principle 2, because it hits exactly at that point, Todd. Because my next question is, okay, you believe in continuous improvement. My next question is, actually, there's two questions I'll typically ask. The first one is, are you above average? Is your sales force above average? It's a lot more fun to do it in front of a crowd with 300 or 400 people and say, right, Okay, everybody that's below average, raise your hand. The fact of the matter is, there's 5 people in the room here. Half of us are below average. Get over it.
Right.
Get over it.
Poor Stone.
Yeah. and then the next question that follows it, are you getting better? Are you getting better or not? How do you know if you're getting better? Okay, what are the key things that you need to do every day, often and well, to make sure that you're selling as much of your product and or service as you possibly can? What are those things, and how much better are you getting every day? If you can't answer that question, if you can't show me data that says I'm 3% faster, or my sell cycle is 5% shorter, or my average deal is 20% larger, if you don't have the empirical data behind that, I'm going to look at you and say, hey, pal, you are not dedicated to continuous improvement, because you can't tell me if you're getting better or worse, or at what pace you're getting better or worse. If you don't have the metrics, and a bunch of them, if you don't have a bunch of metrics to tell me if you're getting better or worse or staying the same and at what pace, you don't know. So don't tell me you're dedicated to continuous improvement unless you can show me the numbers. That's core principle number 2. I love Tiger Woods as an example. Go to tigerwoods.com. He has 100, count them, 100 metrics.
Really?
Of how to play the game of golf. Okay, and for example, one of them that pops to mind, Tiger is 100, he's the best golfer in the world, by the way. He's got the lowest average score in tournament play and has the best PGA rating. He's the best golfer in the world, period, end of discussion, based on those two pieces of data. What strikes me is he is 188th best at hitting the fairway off the tee with a driver.
I never would have thought that.
He's 188th best. He's like 77th at hitting the green from greater than 200 yards out. Okay, now there's 100 of these numbers. Are you the Tiger Woods of what you do, by the way, Stone? Okay, there's a point to that. I'm busting your chops a little bit, but there's a point in it. Here's the finest golfer in the world that's measuring 100 different things. Do you think the fact that he knows his statistics in tournament play for these 100 things, do you think that drives his practice routine?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you think it drives his tactical decisions during the course of a tournament?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's the best golfer in the world. Are you the best salesman in your industry? I mean, I ask this question all the time. Well, no, you're not, because you don't have the bloody data. And if you don't have the data, you cannot, I don't even know how you pursue excellence, no less achieve it like a Tiger Woods does. I could give you examples in baseball, in football, in music, in business. If you don't have the empirical data, I'm beating the daylights out of core principle number 2 here. But the point is, if you don't have the data, you can't get better. Other than through dumb luck.
Yeah, if you're going to get Stone to understand that, you have to talk about NASCAR stats.
Okay, I'm not too smart
about
NASCAR.
There's an analogy I can work with.
I'm not too good on NASCAR stats, but I'll
yeah, I'm not the best, but I'm in the chase. How about that?
But the point is, I'll ask you, give me the 5 or 10 or 15 things you need to do well every day to do well at selling.
Well, how many different metrics are there? Does a sales rep or manager need?
This is going to sound like a flippant answer, and I don't mean it that way. You need more than you're using now. Okay, if you're using 2 things now, I ask the question all the time, what do you measure? Well, sales and profit. Who cares about anything else? At the end of the day, that's all that matters. Well, you're right, but it's like a baseball manager saying, hey, I've looked at our numbers, and I know what we got to do. We got to score more runs and keep the other team from scoring so many runs. Go get them, guys. Well, thanks, coach. That's useless. Totally useless. What are all the things underneath it? RBIs and stolen bases, et cetera, making sales calls, coming up with quantified, dollarized value propositions that hit right at the heart of a customer objective or problem. I mean, those are the kinds of things you want to measure. So how many things do you want to measure? I mean, my answer truly is more than you're measuring today. Tiger, you know what? Tiger's got 100 on his website. I have this suspicion that he measures a whole lot more than that. Professional baseball teams measure over 1,000 different things, every one of them. What's more complex, your sales process, your business, or the game of baseball? I mean, it's ridiculous to even – baseball hasn't changed since 1865 when Abner Doubleday wrote the bloody rules. Has your business changed yet this week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's vastly more complex.
Well, a baseball organization will have full-time staff dedicated to measuring and tracking and following and understanding these stats.
Yep.
But I think most organizations in business don't have people doing those same kinds of things.
You're exactly right. That's why I'm still in business after 10
Understood.
Years.
Understood. Glad you're here.
That's exactly. I mean, again.
Call 1-800-TODD, right?
No, but you talk about discipline and analytical and all those things, and sales guys run the other way. But then you say, well, wait a minute. Don't you want to know? Don't you want to know for sure if you're better than him or him or him or him? Yeah, well, we're competitive by nature. It's in our genetic code. Give me more things to compete on. Give me more different things to compete on, and I'll be better. There's an important corollary to that question, though. I say measure more and more things. I have some clients I've worked with that are up into the 40s and 50s of different things that they're measuring, different aspects of selling their product or service. But it's critically important to balance the number of metrics you're using against the pain and agony of collecting them. It is not a straightforward thing to collect the kind of data and get it. As you said, Todd, I'm sorry. I should be able to remember your name. you know, golfers have volunteers that take down all this data. Baseball teams have full-time staff that take down all this data. I recommend all the time you probably need at least a part-time individual on your staff to start collecting this data and a CRM system. I don't know if that's a meaningful acronym, but a sales system that collects data about your accounts, your contacts, your opportunities, how quickly things are moving through your sales cycle, what percentage you close, how big the deals are.
Like the back of that cocktail napkin that Todd carries around in his pocket.
Yeah,
absolutely. One of my favorite books is The E-Myth Revisited. Yeah. And he even talks about if your sales force, half of them are wearing blue suits and half of them are wearing brown suits, you need to know which suit is selling more. Because if the guys in the brown suits aren't selling enough, then they need to stop wearing brown suits. Right. I mean, it's measuring everything.
Yeah.
Go back through for us, if you will, just real quickly, those three core principles.
Yeah, I only talked about two of them.
Oh, okay. I thought I missed number three, and that was my way of covering up.
Yeah, thanks. No, I mean, I spend a lot of time on the metrics thing because it's unnatural to the sales brain until you get down to, don't you want to know if you're better at this and these 10 or 15 or 20 different things? So core principle number one is continuous improvement in your sales process is fundamentally essential. Number two is you have to have metrics and lots of them in order to know if you're getting better and at what rate you're getting better. Now, core principle number three, I'll pose a question first, and I'd ask you, Stone, give me three or four metrics that you would use to judge the performance of your wicket keeper.
Of my who keeper?
Your wicket keeper. Okay, I've seen that clueless look before.
I see it every day.
No, and I'm kidding with you a little bit. That's not my real question. Here's my real question.
Well, you got my attention.
Yeah, no. My real question is why were you totally unable to think of even one metric about the wicketkeeper?
I don't know what
a wicketkeeper is like the cricket. First of all, is the game. And he's like the catcher in baseball.
Okay.
I've exhausted my knowledge of the game of cricket. But my point is you don't know a single thing about the wicket-keeping process. Therefore, you can't tell me even one measurement.
Right.
So here's now let's get back into the sales process and into core principle number three. If you don't have a written down sales process, and everybody in the company knows what it is, when I say discovery, the discovery stage of your sales process, the president's got to know what discovery means. Every salesman has to know, the sales managers, the sales support folks, everybody in the company needs to know that vocabulary. Everybody has to have the same process. I have to have the process defined and agreed to by everybody until I can come up with the metrics. Okay? So that's the third core principle is you've got to have your sales process documented and agreed to by the whole sales team. You implement all this stuff, by the way, in reverse order. First of all, what is your sales process? It's a hoot when you go into some. Say you got somebody with the six reps, a sales manager, and an owner. How many sales processes does that company have?
Typical, probably at least six or eight, right?
Seven. I mean, yeah. Each sales rep, each of the five sales reps
plus
has
the
one.
Owner.
The sales manager has one. The owner has one. You have seven sales processes. How can you measure that? Well, you can measure each of the seven, but how do you compare one to the other? How do you tell what the best practice is? How do you tell where the inhibitors are? You don't know. You got to make it all consistent first. Define that consistent process first. Then figure out what your metrics are.
Do you typically get some pushback from the organizations you're working with, particularly if you've got a real racehorse salesperson or two, and they don't look? I got my process, everything's going fine. You know, I've got my toys, I'm making plenty of money. Leave me alone.
Yeah. Would you like to make more money? Would you like to have more toys?
Oh yeah.
Do you need help? Are you perfect? Are you the Tiger Woods of your sales profession? Well, no, I'm not. I'm not that good. I'm good, but I'm not that. And it's like, okay, what does Tiger do? Look me in the eye and tell me what he does. He measures 100 different things that he publishes, and he works his butt off in his practice schedules, driven by those metrics, to get better at the things he's not so good at. And in the heat of battle, well, he knows the 8 or 10 shots that he's best at. He knows the 8 or 10 things he knows are going to work, have very high odds of working.
Right.
The better you can get at that, if you're selling something or playing golf or playing the French horn or driving a NASCAR car, I don't care what it is. If you have that data and you know what your strengths are and know what your weaknesses are, long term you can work on your weaknesses to get better. And tactically, in the heat of battle, you can exploit the daylights out of your strengths. It's the only way to get better. It's the only way to get better, or unless you want to depend on dumb luck. I haven't had, you know, I've had some dumb luck in my life.
Well, it's a little inconsistent. I can tell you that.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Now, you captured some of these ideas and have shared them in a book called The Dolphin and the Cow. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that metaphor, analogy, whatever you call it.
I did. You know, it's a dopey story when you get right down to it. But when I want to look at something, I was looking for something that had great contrast, okay, the sales eagle. Okay, so the graceful dolphin. I stumbled across it. It's a public domain picture, the dolphin and the cow
right.
jumping. So you think of the sales rep who just gracefully, effortlessly gets everything done versus the plodding cow. So this God-given innate talent is what it takes to be a great sales rep. I mean, my response to that is bull. Sometimes I use different words to describe
it. Even more descriptive.
Yeah, right. But do you need that? Do you need that graceful elegance and some God-given talent? Well, yeah, of course you do. But that plodding, just methodical, relentless improvement like the cow. So that, I don't know. How good an analogy or metaphor is that? But just this contrast, because when you say analytical, you know, every rep you see says, oh, give me more accountability, please. That never happens. That never happens until you go through the three core principles and start people thinking about a Tiger Woods kind of an analogy. They're going, you know, the guy's right. It's pretty bulletproof logic. I mean, I'm not trying to be arrogant about it, but I think if you look through those three core principles, it's pretty tough to argue with.
Well, and we have a new opening for the show. Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show featuring the dolphin and the cow.
Which is which?
I'm not sure I'd recommend that one.
You started to talk a little bit about implementation, and I think I picked up that you talked about implementation sort of happens in reverse order from the way you described the three core principles. Walk us through that a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, typically it depends how big the organization is. If it's a sales force of 5 or 6 people, we'll form what we like to call a sales excellence council. And everybody, all the 5 reps and the sales manager, whoever the sales leader will be on that. In a larger organization, the sales leader needs to be the VP of sales, whatever the individual's title is. And 5 or 6 of the best folks. I describe how to pick somebody to be on your sales excellence council. If you say, Stone Payton's on our sales excellence council, everybody else in the company goes, oh, good choice. So immediately, the credibility is already there, already established. So I want the Eagles. I want the best guys on that. The first thing we'll do is sit down, and we use some technology and drawing diagrams, and we map out a sales process. And it is painful. it's just because it sounds like, okay, you know, we're going to figure out what the sales process here, guys. We got to bang this out in about a half hour. Yeah, it won't take that long. You know, and then about a day and a half later, it's like, you know, I think we got at least a reasonable first draft. And it takes probably 24 hours of focused work to get a sales process mapped out. And then the beauty of it is I've got the best guys in the company, already have the credibility and respect of everybody else in the company, and they say, here's the process we agreed to follow. Here's how we're going to measure it. Here are the metrics we think we ought to hit. Here are the standards of performance we think we ought to hit. Okay, and if you're, you know, in a 100-person sales force, you're 99th,
mm-hmm.
Are you going to argue with this?
No,
because the best 5 guys in the company said this is the way to do it and be successful in our business. So now you got to implement it. That, I mean, it's a little bit of a blunt object to get the implementation started. But that's what it takes. Unless you have the leaders, the Eagles, the guys that are already respected, already have the credibility, they're saying, this is how I'm going to get better. This is how I'm going to pursue excellence. Well, yeah, I'm 99th, but I'm not going to do it the way they do. I mean, you look like a moron. I mean, I made it. I oversimplified this whole the CRM right. system. I'm at customer relationship management. It's an industry. I hate it, but it's a piece of software pretty common to get now. I mean, ACT and Goldmine are the old traditional ones that you've heard. And there's a ton of them out there now, but it's a computer system where the rep has to keep track of one place, not the napkin, Todd. I hate, you know, I've written a lot of things on napkins myself, but it's a habit now. It gets transcribed into my system. And it's a pain in the neck to key everything in.
Yeah.
But then when I want to retrieve information, bam-o, I got it instantaneously because I know it's all in one place. It's all sorted out. Is it an accounting information, a contact, an opportunity, a to-do, a conversation I had last year, a proposal I did 5 years ago? I can find it in seconds as opposed to rooting through, where did I put that pad of notebook paper? Where did I put the napkin, the sticky note? Do I have an email maybe somewhere? It's the retrieval part. Do I have to take time putting stuff in? Oh, yeah. And reps hate that. They hate it. You want to turn me into a typist? Yeah, shut up and do it. Because how long? It's going to take you 5 seconds to type it in. If you want to find that information, how long is it going to take you to get it back out? You're going to waste a half an hour looking for the napkin.
Well, you mentioned the guy who's 99th. The reason he's 99th is he does not have the discipline to do all that follow-up work. That's the difference.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. Discipline and accountability, if you're a true Eagle sales rep, you should crave it. You should demand it. If you're interviewing for a job and the guy on the other side of the table isn't asking you about discipline and accountability, don't take the job because you're going to be trying to be an eagle with a bunch of turkeys. Don't go.
We're just about out of time, Todd, but I got a few more questions I've got to get in on this interview. One of which is, in reading through the book, you seem to have a little bit of a different take on this whole idea of best practices. Can you tell us more about your thinking around the way best practices are collected and then how you get sales forces to actually go out and execute on them?
Yeah. What's really fun, it's probably one of the most fun things I get to do. You get one of these sales excellence councils together, and these guys are all beating their chest. They're all King Kong. They are. They're the best of the group. I say, okay, we're going to start with best practices because you get your best practices all lined up in sequence, and you have a process. That's the whole point. Line the best practices up to get the process. Take out a piece of paper right now and write down the 10 most important things you need to do to be successful at your job, in your industry, in this business. Just write down the 10. And it's a blast to watch it. Everybody picks up the pen, they write one down instantly. Half the group writes the second one down instantly. Then there's this painful pause.
Cricket.
Yeah, right. Cricket. And they're all sitting there. And then that's when I get to be kind of a wise guy, saying, what, you're the best? You guys got to be kidding me. We've been here 5 minutes, and you've been in sales for 15 years? And you can't write down 10 things that are important to do? Huh? And so try it sometime. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating.
I don't want to now, and I'm definitely not going to try it here in front of you.
but you do that. I mean, that's the beginning of best practices, and then because it's not obvious. It's in the game of golf, it's obvious what you got. Well, it's more obvious for baseball or something else. But in your business, what are the things that you do that really are important? And you're not going to come up with that list in 5 or 10 minutes. It's going to take you 5 or 10 weeks. And you're really going to start sorting it out. You're going to say, you know what? I think articulating quantified value propositions that tie back to the customer's objective or problem, I think that's it. Okay, let's start measuring the daylights out of that thing. Let's measure it. And let's correlate how many times I have a quantified value proposition with the wins I have. And let's see mathematically, analytically, is that really a best practice? Or is having beers, you know, after work with the decision maker, is that a best practice? I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Right.
And it makes me feel good, and I have great relationships. But is that really important? Does it really drive sales, or does it drive, you know, alcohol problems? Okay, I don't know. In some businesses, the beer after work is critical. In other businesses, it'll kill you. I mean, literally, you'll blow your credibility out of it. So how do you know that unless you measured it? Was that your question?
I
get back to metrics every time because without the analysis of the numbers based on the process, you don't know if you're getting better or not.
We have a ton of other questions, but Todd, you know too much to fit into a half-hour radio show.
You're the first person that ever said that.
But I hope you'll come back. And before we let you go, a couple of things. I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you. What's the best way for them to contact you?
Pick up the phone and call me. You might be able to tell I love to talk about this stuff. 770-514-1189. Or an email, Todd, at ypsgroup.com. Or go to the website, and there's all kinds of contact buttons there at ypsgroup.com.
Terrific.
Including all of his golf stats.
Yeah.
Man, you don't want to see my golf stats.
Well, before we do let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show, Todd. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they've learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Yeah, because it's just so glaring. I have the good fortune to do some good bit of public speaking at conferences, and I met a CEO came up to me. This CEO of a nationwide company, about $700 million in sales, came up and said, "I heard your speech. You are exactly what we need." So I'm thinking I'm golden here. He gives me a name to call and says, "This is our training director. We need to get you plugged into the training." Well, I'll make a long story short. I described a little bit about a sales excellence council, small group, mm-hmm. extremely interactive. Well, by the time I got, the training director didn't want anything to do with that, just because the CEO wanted it. But there was a lot of money in it, so it's like, well, it's not going to be five or six people. We need three different, there'll be about 500 people in each group. And it needs to be a day and a half to a day and three quarters long. So what started as a perfect opportunity, I have an in with the CEO mm-hmm. of the company, turned into a disaster. Because I did one session out in Salt Lake City for, it was 300 people. And I talked for a day and a half. Oh, it was awful. and then everybody calls everybody else, and I had to go to two more places after that. So right out of the chute, they're thinking, oh, this guy's going to be awful. We're going to sit here. So, I mean, it was the god-awful painful.
So if you had that to do again,
the lesson behind it is, the YPS group has a process that we follow called the Sales Excellence Council to implement sales process engineering. Follow the process. I spend my whole life preaching, follow the process in measurement and measure it. And because I had a big deal that had a lot of money in it, it was the most horrible professional experience I ever had. And I spent, 6 days destroying my own credibility. So know what you're good at, know what your process is, and then follow the darn thing.
Excellent advice. Todd, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. And we really do want you to come back. Would you come back sometime?
I'd love to. This was fun.
All right. Can you hang out with us for a little while we introduce our next guest?
You got the smart guy on next, so I'm going to listen.
All right. Todd, tell us about our next guest.
Yeah, our next guest on High Velocity is Dan Lack. He's the founder of Pushing Beyond, which is a new initiative that's dedicated to helping professionals and students hone in on their passions and achieving their dreams. He's a world traveler. He's the youngest president in 88 years of the Atlanta Junior Chamber of Commerce. And he's launched this national meeting of the Big Minds Entrepreneurial Conference. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So tell us all about Pushing Beyond. I'm so intrigued to hear and learn more about this.
In a nutshell, we just want to get out there and help young professionals and college kids follow their passions. There was a time a couple months ago where I was in between ventures, and I started talking to a bunch of my friends from college and talking to a bunch of my entrepreneurial and philanthropic friends across the country. And there was a clear gap. There was two groups that came appearing, and one group was absolutely miserable in what they were doing. I'm sure most people in this room or listening to this show know of at least one person who hates their job and they're just miserable in that opportunity. And then on the flip side, I knew a bunch of entrepreneurs and philanthropists and other people who were following their passions and loving it. They were doing amazing things across the country, experiencing phenomenal results, and not necessarily financial results, but they were happier. They loved what they were doing. And we always heard growing up, if you follow your passions, the money will come. And if you love what you do, you'll never spend a day of your life working. But how do you make that happen? And so many people have a tough time finding the answers to those two statements or how to make them reality, especially young people. And there weren't many voices out there trying to encourage and inspire young professionals and college kids to follow their passion. So I said, hey, you know what? Why not? Let's tackle it. Let's do it.
That's great stuff. You know, you graduated UGA in 07, right?
Yeah, 2 years
ago. Which means you're what, 23? 24. 24 years old. Most 24-year-olds I know are working at Taco Mac and or living at home trying to figure out what to do next. How come you're different? How come you're...
I don't know. I'm hungry. I've always been driven and passionate. It's funny to say, Stone and I were catching up the other day, and I said, it started back in first grade. I was sitting in elementary school, and the principal came on the loudspeaker, and she said, all right, we're passing out Sally Foster gift wrap this week, and the number one seller of the gift wrap gets a ride to the local pizzeria in a limousine. And I said, oh my gosh, I'm going to win this thing. And sure enough, I was the number one seller of gift wrap, thanks to my parents, and thanks to my parents again. It's funny to say, but I actually reclaimed the title for the next 3 or 4 years at school, and really got bit by this entrepreneurial business bug and kept at it from then and started interning in high school when I was 16 and had 5 summers of internships through high school and college and traveled the country and the world and just wanted to keep going and found that as I was pondering what was next, this seemed like such a great fit to get out there and help other people.
You know, a lot of the people that I admire in the world, people like Tim Ferriss, people like Gary Vaynerchuk, they all talk about their entrepreneurial spirit that they had when they were young kids.
Yeah.
And so I think if and when I ever have my own children, I'm that's something I'm really going to focus on. So I admire the fact that that you do that. So tell us about some of the travels you've done.
For fun or for business?
Both.
Well, I have a rule in my company that when you're taking a business trip, it's important to have more fun than business. So I've been very fortunate to be all over the world. When I was in college, I studied abroad in New Zealand and Australia and got to scuba dive the Great Barrier Reef and bungee jump the second tallest bungee in Queenstown, New Zealand, which was a blast. And I've backpacked all over Europe, been to about 13 countries in Europe, and moved to South America for 6 months after I graduated and did some importing and exporting consulting in Ecuador and got to travel down to Peru and hike the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu and hang out at the beaches in Brazil, and it's been unbelievable.
What are you going to do for the next 24 years of your life?
Exactly. But most recently just got back literally late last night. Was out in Fayetteville, Arkansas for the Georgia-Arkansas football game. So I got to say, go Dogs. Good win on Saturday. And before that, we were actually out in San Francisco at TechCrunch 50, a big technology conference out there on Monday and Tuesday. And props to those guys for doing a great job putting it together. And what we also do at Pushing Beyond is we thought a great way to really start and help people figure out what they were passionate about was to help them see the stories of others. And so we launched a 36-week nationwide interview series at pushingbeyond.com, where once a week we interview an entrepreneur, musician, athlete, author, philanthropist, comedian who is following their passions and doing amazing things as a result. So we had some great interviews while we were out in San Francisco. We interviewed Tim Westergren, who founded Pandora.com, the widely popular online radio station where he kind of artificial intelligence through the Music Genome Project selects the music that they think you'll like. And we interviewed Matt Flannery, the founder of Kiva.org, which is considered one of the first breakthrough companies to really hit on microfinance and microlending and really help these entrepreneurs in developing and emerging countries make it. They've helped people raise over $100 million in microfinance loans. So it's been awesome.
So tell us a little bit about these interviews. Are you picking up some themes that are consistent across all of these interviews?
Absolutely. You know, it's they all say different things, but some of them theme together. And a couple things. One thing I hear over and over and over is get in the game and get in as quick as you can. And that sometimes we want to plan everything out to a T and have the the 1 year plan and the 5 year plan and the 10 year plan mapped, and we don't want to get started until we've got everything laid out on table. And it's great to plan, but every person I've interviewed says, get in the game and get started. And that's exactly what we did with Pushing Beyond. We kind of launched the company or started it in May of this year, and about 6 to 8 weeks later, we launched this 36-week nationwide interview series. And we're still learning as the days go on, but you just got to get in the game and get going. Another thing a lot of people say, is this is great. I think Derek Sivers, who's a musician and an entrepreneur that we interviewed, he says there's no such thing as failure. It's only feedback. And when you're able to kind of turn the tables that way and not put a negative connotation with something like the word failure, and yet you're always trying to learn from that experience, if you will, and that it's just feedback telling you, tweak the model, now you're on the right track. So get in the game, always be learning, no such thing as failure, it's only feedback. And then most everybody, even those in this room, probably found success not by themselves. They either had advisory boards, mentors, coaches, peer-to-peer groups, mastermind groups, whatever you want to call it, but they shared their ideas and their know-how with others. They got constructive feedback, they found people to hold them accountable, and that's really what helped propel them to success. So those three things are huge.
Now, this national meeting of the big minds, this entrepreneurial conference, that's about helping people find mentorship and mastermind groups and forming that. Is that right?
Yeah, more or less. This is a small group that's actually my mastermind group and my peer-to-peer group, if you will, that I started earlier this year. And in fact, it's a group of 18 to 20 people that get together every 6 months. And sometimes the attendance change and we have new faces or reoccurring faces. But when you're really motivated and driven, you want to do something big and create big global change, sometimes it's hard to find other like-minded individuals that you can relate to and bounce ideas off of. And as I started traveling more across the country and the world and developing my network, I met these amazing visionaries, if you will, and I wanted to bring them together so they could help each other out and ultimately propel the status of their own companies. And so twice a year, I hold the meeting of the big minds out at my family's Fox Creek Ranch out in Richards, Texas. And it's really a three-day mastermind building weekend. Each person has got a 20-minute spotlight to talk about what they're currently working on and where do they need help. What are their struggles? What challenges are they facing on their own ventures? It's been as specific as I'm going to be in Miami next week and I'm looking for entrepreneurs or philanthropists or comedians or musicians or athletes to interview, or I'm in between ventures right now and I'm not really sure what to do next, or I've got a problem with an employee that I don't know how to handle, or I'm at the stagnant growth and I need to figure out how I can jumpstart my growth. And so each person there has this 20-minute spotlight, if you will, to really talk about what they're working on and how the group can help. And then the second component is putting people in an opportunity and in an environment to create quality relationships. There's a lot of one-on-one time where you can go off and you go fishing or play, you know, basketball or ping pong or relax on the hammocks and really take the relationship to the next level, provide more feedback based on the individual's spotlight and tell them what you think and how you can help.
So how does a 24-year-old kid from Georgia, even one as good-looking as smart as you, secure interviews with all of these rock stars? How do you pull that off?
You just got to ask, and that's a weird, people say that and you say, well, it's got to be more than you just got to ask. But if you're authentic and you mean well and you're not, you got to respect their time and you don't want to come across as a stalker, if you will. But, you just got to ask. There's email, there's Twitter, there's the phone, and those three things, and Facebook, let's say those four things. And, if you try to make contact once a week, consistently, I think that you'll find people will be responsive. And especially if you've got a good initiative and people want to get behind it or they can relate to it. But, for example, we're trying to get in touch with Mark Zuckerberg, who founded Facebook. It's hard. People like, how do you get his phone number? Well, you Google it, maybe you go to Facebook.com and you realize you can't find his phone number, but then you get creative and you Google Facebook, Palo Alto, CA, and what do you know? Facebook's address and phone number pop up and the Google search. So now you got the guy's phone or the office phone number, and through that you get his email address, hopefully, or, try to figure it out. Just be creative and authentic, and we don't have a confirmed interview with Mark Zuckerberg yet, but we're doing one with Tony Hsieh of Zappos. We're doing one with Keith Ferrazzi, two-time best-selling author. We just did Tim Westergren of Pandora. We've had some amazing people here in Atlanta, Haley Kilpatrick of Girl Talk, which runs the fastest mentoring program in the country. Aaron Arnold from Music Is My Business, been written up in Inc. magazine a couple times. Garrett Graveson from the Global Lead Program. Just rock stars where you just ask. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and ask.
Stone, we're going to start a running counter about how many shows in a row Tony Hsieh of Zappos has mentioned.
I knew where you were headed with that comment. It seems like for the last 8 or 10 shows, anytime we're talking, the Zappos comes up. That's amazing. I mean, yeah. The guy's obviously doing some good stuff.
They're awesome. And the thing I like most about Tony is he's really keen on happiness and loving what you do. And that's kind of, a big premise for Pushing Beyond is, I'd love to ask the audience right now, do you love what you're doing? Do you love what you're doing right now in life? Do you love your job or do you love your extracurricular stuff? And let's just say your job or your career, for example. If you don't love what you're doing, why are you still doing it? And certainly the older you get in life, maybe you have more responsibilities, married and kids and mortgage and what have you. But if you recognize that what you're doing is not in line with your personal goals, I certainly hope you'll try to get a 30-day action plan or a 90-day action plan or something in place to reanalyze what are you happy about or passionate about, what do you want in your life, and go for that. And I got to tell you real quick, there's a great exercise out there, and it goes like this. Imagine that, and I'll speak to the gentleman in the room right now. Imagine that we're in this, recording studio, and we just found out there's some deadly gas that comes in through the air conditioning vents, and we have 30 days to live. We're all breathing this in, and we all have 30 days to live because we've breathed in this toxins. So write down right now what you would do in those next 30 days. So let's assume, fast track, and you write down what you would do in those next 30 days if you only had 30 days to live. And now as you're reading it, I would propose to you, if you're not doing exactly what you wrote down you would do in those next 30 days right now, get out of here. What are you waiting for? And I would imagine for you guys, it's doing this radio. Sure, for me, it's pushing beyond. You know, for Todd, I would imagine you're pretty passionate about the sales process. So it's great to be surrounded by passionate people. But if you're not doing what you'd be doing in the next 30 days or a year or 5 years right now, what are you waiting for?
It's a fascinating phenomenon. You know, we talked about discipline in our last interview. You talked about people needing these 30-day action plans, those 60-day action plans. But most people don't have the discipline to sit down and think these things through. And I just don't understand why people do you understand? Have you cracked the code as to why most people out there are stuck in Cubicle Nation and miserable with their life?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, no one ever said, and I will not say, it's easy to follow your passions. It's hard sometimes. A, it's hard to figure out what you're passionate about. And then B, once you know it, it's hard to take that jump and go for it. But you got to surround yourself with the right people and great people and take that jump and go for it. But I will say there is a tremendous amount of pressure that people feel in this country, regardless of your age. But I'll speak specifically to younger people because that's really our demographic at Pushing Beyond. There's a tremendous amount of pressure to get into the best college you can get into. And then once you've graduated from that college, to get the best job you can get, which traditionally means the one that pays the most with the best benefits from the most reputable company. That's what our kind of tradition history says. And so I certainly understand why many of my peers have got these jobs in what you would call Cubicle Nation, or I would agree. And maybe they're not happy because there was this pressure to get in, get that paycheck, and start buying what everybody else buys, get that nice car or nice apartment, or go out to Buckhead or Midtown or wherever you might be, and you know, go drink a lot or hang out a lot and party and eat out at restaurants and whatnot. There's that pressure that we feel from our peers, our friends, our parents, our colleagues, our bosses, and I think that is a huge reason why people feel stuck. If you're in this cushy $80,000 a year consulting job doing 60 or 80 hours a week, you're on the road and whatnot, it might seem great at first, but then you realize, you know, I don't really love it that much, but now I live in a nicer condo in Midtown, and now I'm eating out more, and now, you know, I just bought this new condo, or if you will, or I got a, you know, lease on my car, and a lot of pressure that people feel.
You're making me think of the movie Fight Club, where they talk about the possessions end up owning you. So do you think that the new marketing, the social media, which makes the world a smaller place, is that going to facilitate and make it easier for people to figure out how to follow their passions because they can connect more with people of like mind?
I think absolutely. And if nothing else, excuse me, it helps you find more and research more and learn more in a shorter amount of time. And instead of maybe going to the library and finding books, now they're all online more or less. And there's blogs written, there's radio shows, there's, you know, video interviews, there's everything you can find on the web to really help get clear on what you're passionate about or research a lot. If you want to write a blog, you can certainly research that. If you want to play a musical instrument, you can research that. And then once you want to get a name for yourself and push it out there, you can reach so many people through Facebook, Twitter, and I don't even want to say MySpace because it's a dying brand in my opinion, and I don't even use it. But just between email, Facebook, and Twitter, it's unbelievable. But also, I would say don't be afraid to pick up the phone because I think a lot of people forget to do that, and I'm a big proponent of that.
I think it's easy to fall into that trap, too. You get all these new sexy technologies, and you forget about the handwritten note or the cup of coffee or the phone call or
Absolutely.
Something like that.
There's a really cool website. I think it's called ping.fm, P-I-N-G.fm, and it allows you to update your status once, and it sends it out to Twitter and Facebook and all these things. But I'm amazed at how many different sites it sends it to. It's you gotta have, you know, 30 different accounts on 30 different websites, and that's a little too much for me. But yes, I think social media will definitely help people, and you should use it if you're not.
We were talking about some themes a few moments ago. Also in these interviews, have you come across anything that really surprised you, just really took you aback and you weren't expecting in some of these interviews?
You know what's interesting is that I've interviewed a couple entrepreneurs who are also musicians, and this has been really interesting to me because they weren't full-time musicians in the sense right now we're in the public spotlight like maybe some of the rock and roll artists or hip-hop artists that are out there, but they had been musicians for a number of years, Derek Sivers and also Tim Westergren of Pandora, and what they talk about, and especially Tim, what's really interesting is being a musician is a lot like being an entrepreneur. You know, you're responsible for creating the product, marketing the product, distributing the product, building your fan base. And I was not expecting to hear and learn more about the correlation between being a musician and being an entrepreneur that has certainly come up in those interviews.
So let's have our own little mastermind here for a moment. We don't have enough time to work on Todd and my problem, but if we were in some sort of mastermind group and we were at that point in the process and it was your turn to share with the group, hey, here's where we are in our process and here's where we could use some help or where we could generate some ideas, what could we do to help you and push them beyond?
I appreciate the ask. Right now, we're really two things. One, we're really trying to get the word out there as much as we can about pushingbeyond.com and the interview series. So as much as we can spread the word and encourage people to watch these interviews online and send us feedback on what they liked and what they didn't like and what's helping them, we really want to figure out what does it take to follow your passions. So we'd love to push people to the site. If you've got a story on how you've been following your passions and what has worked for you personally, we'd love to hear that. So please send us an email. You can send it to me directly, dan@pushingbeyond.com. And if you're connected to some rock star entrepreneur, philanthropist, comedian, author, actor, athlete that you think is certainly following their passions and would be great to highlight their story, send it our way. And, we'd love to get in touch with them and share as many stories as we can.
You have some cool interviews coming up, or where are some future travels taking you?
Good question. We'll be up in New York early November, so trying to put some things together for New York. I try not to talk about things that we haven't filmed because people's schedules change all the time, but we are definitely doing one with Keith Ferrazzi, who's a phenomenal two-time best-selling author. He wrote Never Eat Alone, and his current book, Who's Got Your Back, is number one on the New York Times list and Amazon, so really excited to talk with Keith. And he's really keen on relationship building and building quality relationships, which is such a core component to following your passions. Like I was saying earlier, you can't do it by yourself. So Keith's got some great methodology and suggestions on how to really build those quality lifelong relationships that'll help you get there. And Tony Shea, we're certainly excited to do that. We're challenge with Tony is that, Zappos just got acquired by Amazon for $847 million, I think. So he's traveling all over the country.
Now, where are you doing that interview? Are you doing it at the Zappos facility in Vegas?
You know, honestly speaking, we will do it wherever we can do it. Tony and I were both out in San Francisco at TechCrunch 50, but he was in and out, and it didn't work with our schedules. We've got Las Vegas on the tour schedule to be out there, so hopefully we'll confirm with his calendar.
Is his tour schedule available on your website?
His tour schedule is not. Our tour schedule, we've got an episode guide where you can see kind of the upcoming interviews and where we're going. So,
So it's pushingbeyond.com.
Easy enough.
Video interviews of all these great, interesting, passionate people. Strongly recommend you go. I mean, that's to me just kind of a weekly thing. Go in there and listen to some of these interviews. And there's an opportunity to engage with each other and comment on it and provide any information that your readers and your listeners might have about other people you might want to interview. I mean, it's a very engaging site, I think.
Oh, it's awesome. We're having so much fun doing it. I'm really passionate about this and helping sharing these stories. And the responses we've gotten have been fantastic. So please continue to send them in and let us know what you think. But, yeah, if you don't like what you're doing or you're miserable in your job or you're trying to figure out what your next thing is and whatnot, definitely check it out. I think it'll really help.
Well, I know it will. It has been a lot of fun having you on, Dan. Before we let you go, you saw us put our other guest on the hot seat. I wonder if we might do the same thing with you. Maybe you'd be willing to share a mistake you've made at some point in your career and what you learned from it.
No, absolutely. It's pretty basic, but I think that when you're starting a new venture or a new opportunity, I thought it was going to grow a lot quicker and I was going to need a lot less cash than I was going to need. And so I think the lesson learned is double your budget on how much you think it's going to cost and double the amount of time you think it's going to take to build. But another thing that I just want to touch on real quickly on that is I would encourage those out there not to lower your expectations. If you set your expectations high just because you're not reaching them immediately, don't necessarily lower them. Just try to learn how you can, instead of focusing negative energy on lowering them, focus positively. What can you do differently? How can you tweak the model to reach those high expectations? So
life's about living on the edges. You gotta get out there.
I say go big or go bigger.
Double your budget and don't lower your expectations. I love it. Oh, what a lot of fun. What a great show, huh, Todd?
It was a great show. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Dan Lack, Todd Youngblood, Todd Schnick, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.